The Progressive Threat to the American Republic. That is a new monograph by Ed Vitaliano, who is the executive vice president of the American Family Association. And I say monograph only in the sense that it is short, but very powerful. Ed, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Sure. All right. So tell us about this booklet that you wrote.
Well, you know, as I several years ago, as I was writing a series of articles for the American Family Association Journal, I began to do some research on the history of the progressive movement, and I only thought I understood how we got to where we are in this country as I began to read and study statements from President Woodrow Wilson and others who were kind of the flag bearers for the early manifestation of the progressive movement in this country. I was shocked at how openly they spoke about changing the foundational ideas of this country, going back to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And so I wrote those articles, and we put this together into a booklet because we just thought the time had come for the church and people in the church to understand that this really is a spiritual war. There can be good-hearted, you know, disagreements between Republicans and Democrats and conservatives and liberals, but at the end of the day, the important questions are always about God and His truth. And I just wanted people to see that question, that battle, that spiritual war, if you will, really is impacting where we are and where we're going.
President Eisenhower once said this, something to this effect. He said that the essence of Americanism, what really makes us what we are, defines us what we are, is recognizing the Supreme Being. That's it. In other words, the essence of America is the idea encapsulated in our Declaration of Independence that we have God-given rights. But when you talk about the progressive left, and so if what you're talking about, a godless country or a vision for a godless country, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. This was the origins of the progressive movement in this country are roughly, it comes after the Civil War, roughly 1880 to 1920. And the intellectuals, many
hey,
of the intellectuals
can I interrupt
country,
you? Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Do you know that's around the same time as the rise of the Jim Crow movement as well? I just wanted to point that out, but go ahead.
That's right, right after Reconstruction. And in fact, it's pretty fascinating. I'm just beginning to do some reading on the fact that fascists actually looked in this country to Jim Crow. The Nazis actually looked at Jim Crow laws and adopted them before Hitler actually came to power, but in the early years of the Nazi Party. They wanted to know how to suppress Jews in Germany, and they actually looked to Jim Crow laws in the South. It's a fascinating study as I'm beginning to embark on that. But these were individuals that went to Europe and saw the ideology behind the French Revolution, which was humanistic, and they came back and wanted to import that into our culture and change us away from a reliance upon God to a humanistic worldview. And so when people say, well, how come we're not allowed to pray in schools anymore? How come we can't post the Ten Commandments? All of that is the result of a humanistic endeavor that took over law schools in the early part of the 1900s, so that by the middle part of the 20th century, we were getting Supreme Court rulings that totally disregarded the foundational ideas of our country, which involved, as you said, and in the Declaration of Independence, a recognition of the supremacy of God.
Okay, when you say these people, and you're talking about in the 1880 to 1920 zone, who are you talking about? Name some names, please, if you would.
Yeah, well, for example, here is a name that probably most people aren't familiar with. Some historians might. The name of John Burgess. He was a law professor at Columbia University. He was actually a founder of the discipline of political science in the U.S. There was no such thing as political science before the latter part of the 1800s. So he's writing in a book in 1890, and he is convinced that the changes that are happening in Western civilization in the United States the results of the Industrial Revolution and cultural changes. He was convinced that government had to be the one to kind of mediate those changes and shepherd the people. He said that the purpose of the state was the perfection of humanity and the civilization of the world. He said the state is the one who will perfectly develop human reason and have an attainment to universal command over individualism. Now, that's kind of shocking for us to hear people, especially someone as influential as John Burgess, say the state perfects humanity. And what progressives eventually saw was that if the state is going to perfect civilization and perfect humanity and take command over individualism so that everyone conforms to the state ideas, the state was going to have to be all-powerful, essentially. And that's where the idea of bigger government, the idea of bureaucrats who are experts in their field telling the rest of Americans how they should live, this is where all these ideas come from. And, of course, we hear those echoes today.
Yeah, and it's fascinating.
That's one example.
Yeah, sure. But think about this. Here he's saying this around 1890, 24 years later, World War One develops, and you see the state is the answer? Are you serious? Here are these formerly Christian states butchering each other. And, you know, it's still hard to find some people to explain exactly what World War One was all about. I think the best explanation is, well, these different nations had different alliances. And then once the powder keg was lit, one country was defending another country, which got involved in the war. Therefore, these countries with these different alliances were fighting against each other. And when it's all said and done, France loses about half of its young men, and the state is the answer? My goodness, you're kidding me. Okay, name another leader that we should recognize in this vision for the godless future that has so plagued the 20th century and the 21st century.
Absolutely. And by the way, you make a very, very good point, Jerry. World War One shattered the public face of progressivism, and it shattered the faith of a lot of progressives. But it had already sunk into the academy, to colleges and universities and law schools. And even though the public perception of progressivism was shattered by World War One, it had already taken root. Now, to your question, Charles Merriam is another one. He was a professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He also became an advisor to several U.S. presidents, including Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was writing in 1903, and he was agreeing with Burgess's idea about this process of perfecting man. He said, though, it wouldn't occur overnight. He said, this might be the most shocking admission I had read in my studies about progressives. He said, quote, "This end," in other words, the end of perfecting man, "can be realized, however, only when a world state is organized, and for this, mankind is not yet ready." Now, I don't know about you, but I'm sure a lot of your audience is aware of what the Bible teaches about the end times and a one-world government. But this is in 1903, Charles Merriam, very influential progressive, saying the only way we can truly progress, the only way we can truly advance humankind is for there to be a world, one world government, and he admits mankind is not yet ready for that. Well, we, to this day, continue to see the progressive push for a globalist, unified state. Every time something's mentioned, whether it's climate change or, you know, this particular need or that particular need, there is always a push to centralize that authority, not even in Washington, D.C., but in some other city where everybody has to dance according to the tune being played by progressives.
Hmm. You know, it's obvious that there's a sub-theme to your whole book, which is that government is not God. How about mentioning another progressive humanist? Because this is important. You're bringing out facts that most of us are not familiar with. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the kind of most shocking admissions that I found when I was reading, there was a political philosopher named Thomas Hobbes in the 1600s. He used the idea, the symbol of Leviathan, to represent the all-powerful state. Now, Hobbes believed that the state arises and it is raised up by men to protect them from the chaos and danger of nature. So I think even most Christians in reading Romans 13 would say, well, government can do a lot of good things, and it is ordained by God to punish the wicked and to promote what is good. But in analyzing this idea of the all-powerful state, this is in 1938, and this is as the rise of a Nazified Germany kind of casts its shadow across Europe. There was a German political theorist named Carl Schmitt, and he examined this symbol of Leviathan, and he said the state, as it becomes more and more powerful, demands unconditional obedience. He says there exists no right of resistance to him, neither by invoking a higher nor a different right, nor by invoking religious reasons and arguments. And Carl Schmitt went on to say that the government determines what is right and proper, and even in matters pertaining to religious beliefs, the state has the right to determine what is true and what is error. And when we see Supreme Court rulings like the recent one in 2015, Obergefell decision, but even going back to some of the other decisions like Lawrence v. Texas, you see the Supreme Court more and more saying, if you have a religious view about what marriage is, it is illegitimate. It cannot be used to determine public policy. And basically what the Supreme Court is saying is what Carl Schmitt said, and that is that Leviathan, this all-powerful state, determines what is right and what is wrong. And for now, you can believe what you want in your churches, but don't bring it outside those four walls. That's pretty shocking stuff when people, this sounds like the thing of science fiction, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, too, because when you think about this, so often liberals today will talk about, well, yeah, there's the right to worship. Well, wait a minute now. The Constitution guarantees the right to free exercise of religion. It explicitly says that, and yet they're changing and modifying it to the right to worship. That sort of conforms with that. But do me a favor, go back to Carl Schmitt for a second. Give me his historical context. What country is he from, and approximately what decade is he saying these things?
Yes, now he made the statement that I read. That was in 1938. He was a German political theorist. So he was he's very controversial because he is a well-known progressive, but he kind of had this dalliance with Nazism as well. So he was a kind of explaining the symbol of Leviathan that Thomas Hobbes had used, and he's approving of it. But he's actually going a little bit further, I think, than Thomas Hobbes would go. Sure. He is saying the only thing that determines right and wrong is the state. So this is all in that kind of milieu of fascism in Italy and Nazism, form of fascism and socialism in Germany, and that's when Carl Schmitt is peddling these views.
Yeah, and just, you know, recently on this very program, we were talking with Dinesh D'Souza, and he's making the point in his book, The Big Lie, the left wants to blame us for fascism, in other words, the right wing or whatever, and that's so false. It's exactly the opposite. Okay, who else would be somebody that we should know about? And we'll end on this, you know, just give us one last example. We have about less than a minute to go.
Okay, it would be President Woodrow Wilson. President Woodrow Wilson, maybe the most famous political figure that was a progressive. He famously said, some citizens, this is a quote now, some citizens of this country have never gotten beyond the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, brother.
He says this in a campaign speech in 1912 when he was asking the American people to let the Constitution be considered a living document. He actually said, living political constitutions must be Darwinian in structure and in practice. He was advocating against strict constructionism. He wanted the Constitution to be interpreted in a fluid manner that would allow the progressives to do what they wanted without having to go to the American people to vote on everything. And we see that today as clear as ever when progressives talk about the Constitution being a living document.
Ed Vitaliano, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for writing this. Again, it's called The Progressive Threat to the American Republic. You can get more information at afa.net. For Vocal Point, I'm Jerry Newcomb. Thanks a lot, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye-bye.